Okay, now let's talk about your actual previous relationships. Now, you had not only just one, but two back-to-back domestic relationships. And we talked about it, and I believe that that's what bonded us together when we were chatting, because we found a lot of things in common. Could you want to go into detail about how you did two back-to-back?
two back-to-back. Okay, so I had two domestic violent relationships or abusive relationships, whatever your choice of wording is. The first one was with my son's father, and it was when I was 19, 20. I'm 35 now, so that was 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it started normal. He was really sweet. He would show up to my house unannounced with gifts and leave notes, which I didn't think was weird at first. Mm-hmm. It was really good. He started showing more signs of being possessive. Right. Like, he'd get angry if I wasn't home or if I didn't answer the phone, anything. Or if I hung out with my friends, he would like accuse me of sleeping with my friends. It was just really started getting to me. Then his anger started turning into him actually physically hitting me and choking me, and it just escalated. Like, over the course of 3 years, it escalated. The abuse probably started at month like four. It was early on. It wasn't like late, and the rest of the time it was just abusive, and I just stayed. I was afraid to leave. It got to the point where he had shot at me for trying to leave. He slashed my tires. It was like being captured. Like, he would lock me in the house and wouldn't let me leave. Wouldn't let my family come see me until I basically forgave him. And before I knew it, my family didn't want to deal with me. I didn't have any more friends. Mm-hmm. Like, he had completely secluded me away from all of my people, where I just depended on him. Mm-hmm. And that went on for, you know, almost 3 years until I got pregnant with my son and was finally motivated enough to leave. And I moved back home to the small town that I was from, mm-hmm. to get away, but it still wasn't far enough. He still came, and he would still like practically stalk me. And that didn't end until he actually went to prison for something completely unrelated, right? Which was, he actually had got like a gun charge for possession of a firearm, but he wasn't with me. I mean, we weren't together, but he was on his way to come see my son. And so I look at that as a sign from like God's just looking out for me and my son, because we didn't have him to worry about anymore.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And then, so how long was it before you met your second relationship?
Well, like you said, back to back.
I'm not judging. I told you my story.
My ex had went to prison 3 weeks after my son was born. And I met my next boyfriend when my son was 3 months old. That's when we met. And then we started talking and then dating and, you know, of course. And it turned into a relationship where we moved in together after 2 years, and then we, you know, were together for 5 more years. So we were together for a total of 7 years. And it wasn't until like year 3-4 that things got rocky.
Okay.
So that one was a little different, because he was someone I confided in, and I told him everything that happened in the last relationship. He assured me he was nothing like this other person, and he wasn't at first. And he was the sweetest guy. He had never had any relationships that he was in that were violent. And he was a hard worker, and it just was kind of out of the blue. When things got rough, like, he lost his job because he used to work for a show, and the show got canceled and he got laid off. And then he just started drinking more and hanging out with his friends more. And then he was just really unhappy, and he started taking it out on us at home instead of like seeking help or trying to get better. And it started with him slamming stuff, breaking stuff, yelling, backing me into corners, you know, talking down to me, like he would bring up my past from my ex and tell me how like low I was and how fucked up I was and call me out my name to make me feel like shit. And then like he wouldn't be satisfied until I was like balled up in the corner crying. So it was like verbally mental abuse in that situation. And you know, I stayed because I would be like, well, at least he's not hitting me. And that's a bad thing that a lot of women think about, is they accept emotional abuse and thinking that it's better than physical abuse, but sometimes it's way worse, which caused me to drink more and want to escape and stuff. And, you know, in both situations, what I don't tell a lot of people is I contemplated, in the first one especially, I contemplated suicide. Like, I thought the only way out of that relationship was to kill him or to kill me or both. Like, it was like on the 4th of July one year, we went to my family's house and we ended up getting into an argument there. And so on the way home, I knew that once we got home, he was gonna hit me. Like, I'm like, I don't wanna get hit. So on the freeway, while he's driving, I spin the car out. I grab the wheels, car spins out on the freeway, and then it's turned sideways and there's a big rig coming and the car cuts off. And so he has to start the car back up. And then luckily it starts up and then we go. Now he's even more pissed. So I just think of things like that, but that was like really scary and a revelation that made me feel like, yeah, no, I didn't really want to die. I just wanted to get out of that situation. And that wasn't the way out.
Right. I understand. I mean, I completely identify with especially a lot of things you said with the first one. I went through the same things. And then with the second one, I went through similar with the same situation. I think that in domestic violence, no matter if it's verbal or physical, it's certain traits that you don't recognize, because like you say, when we're dating and we're first falling in love, we don't see those traits. Because yeah. A lot of women, I know they look at me and they say, well, how did you ever even end up in domestic situations? Because they think that the men all start off as mean. But that's not true. A lot of them are very sweet. A lot of them are very nice. They're very giving from the beginning. And so it's like it lures you in. Your guards are down. A lot of women that you talk to that wind up in domestic relationships, they'll tell you that, you know, it's like the perfect was like a prince charming when you meet.
Right.
In your wildest dreams, thought that person would actually wind up being your most nightmare relationship. But when you talk to people that never had those experiences, they be like, well, how did you ever even get with that person? It's like, well, they wasn't doing this when I met them. They took me on dates. They wined and dined me. You might have traveled with them. They gave you luxurious gifts and everything. And like you say, it may be several months or even years down the line, when you start seeing things that be like red flags.
Right.
Yes,
exactly. Like with my second experience, I tell people all the time, like, I watched a man turn into something that he wasn't. Like, it's not like he was that person. I knew him. We were best friends. And I knew him down to the core, I felt. And the thing is, you don't know who a person is until they're under that type of pressure or whatever it is. But I watched him literally change from being a normal, you know, stable man to being like something you see in a, you know, one of those damn movies, is wearing a wife beater and drinking whiskey every day. So it was just watching the progression. And then, so that's why I stayed there that long, because it was hard to believe, like, this is not the person that I've been with for 3 years that's over here yelling at me like this, and it's going to get better, you know, once he starts working, or once this and that changes, or once we move, or, you know, there's always something, like, once something changes, he's going to get better. But it never changed. It just got worse, and the possessiveness got worse to the point, I didn't have a car at one point, and that's when Uber was just getting, you know, more popular. Mm-hmm. So I have an Uber account, but I had to have my Uber account on his phone so he could see where I was going.
Wow. And
he would like text me like, why are you going here? Why are you going there? You know, little stuff. It was just crazy. Mm-hmm. And then we would get in fights over almost anything. It was like, just, it's Thursday, we're fighting. Like, so, and then the fights got more and more violent. That was the thing that, you know, I noticed in both relationships is the progressive, like, it doesn't get better. People think it's gonna get better. It doesn't get better. It gets worse 99% of the time. It goes from verbal abuse to, you know, maybe a push to a punch to strangling to hitting you with objects to who knows what else. Like, there's car accidents, freaking strangulation, getting shot at. So it always gets worse. And with our situation, it got so bad to where, you know, my kids were in the house. And so my daughter had to call the police. And when the police came, he was basically picking me up outside of our apartment. We live upstairs. And he's like trying to throw me over the damn balcony thing. And he's like slamming me to the ground while the kids are looking out the window. He's like literally picking me up, body slamming me, and my head is just hitting the ground. And then,
oh my God.
When the police come, it was just crazy. But I don't remember much from that time, but this is what they told me. Because they took me to the hospital and I had a concussion and stuff. Wow. And then that was when I was like finally done. That shouldn't have been the last drop. It shouldn't have been that far. It's like, once you see those red flags, women need to leave. Mm-hmm. Like, now, if dating and I see any of those, I'm like, tiptoe, get my ass out of here. Right. So it's very different. It's everyone's relationships or situations are different, but there are these common things that you can find and you can see, like you said, the red flags, so you know. And a lot of women, they want to repaint that picture, but you can't repaint it. And if you have kids, you have to really think about your kids. They're watching and they're learning how to be, you know, adults from us. Right. And so if they see you letting someone hit you or whatever, or you hitting someone, then they are going to reenact that, like playing with their toys. And I would see my son actually doing that with his toys, you know, having his action figures, and it's like, no, you're cooking tonight. So it's different stuff. But yeah, I don't know. Those are my experiences. I mean, I could go in more detail, but it's, you know, I don't have that much.
I mean, you did great. I do know that everything that you said, I went through that as well. And like you said, the signs are there and they progress on and on. But we as women, we're born as most of us are nurturers. And so we think that maybe it's always something that we're doing wrong. Yeah. Always a reason why this person is acting out, because we just not being the best that we can be. But I do agree that when you start seeing certain stuff, you start to start questioning it. And even if you need to talk to people and, you know, get it out your head. And another thing, like you said, was the second one. You noticed that when he lost the job, when he started going through that different season in his life, it's something shifted in him emotionally as a man. And that's something that I tell my girlfriends even now, this dating, that you do what you said. You have to be with somebody through all seasons, because everything can be good the first 3 to 6 months. It could be wonderful because he might be at his job making the top pay. Everything could be going good. He could be got a new car. He's driving the latest car. Everything could be rolling. But like now we're in the middle of a pandemic. What happens if he gets a pink slip when he goes to work tomorrow? And he has to come home and tell you that he can't keep that dream car. You know what I'm saying? Or he could have did something crazy 20 years ago, and now the IRS sent you that big package in the mail telling you that you owe them $20,000 and they garnishing your check. And you know what I'm saying? This is real life. Huh?
I said, yeah, that's real life.
Yeah, that's real life. And then meanwhile, he just bought this brand new Camaro or Hellcat. Or Cadillac. I'm in Houston. You know, they drive Cadillacs. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
everything is shifted in his life. You know what I'm saying? And so, like you said, that brings out a different emotion in people when they're under stress, especially financially stressed, especially as men. If he's just used to going to work and having a job, and now he don't, or his income, he used to making a certain amount of money, and now he don't make that money anymore, you're the next person that is next to him.
Yeah. And then, yeah, exactly. They lose their masculinity and they take it out on you because you're there.
Yeah.
It don't make sense, but it, you know, it is the way that it is for some reason.
Yeah, now moving on. Now when you date now, do you say that you have, you always have it in the back of your mind, those red flags? And do you now, are you emotionally in touch with yourself that when you get those red flags or you get that uneasy feeling that say, hey, I'm going to talk to my partner. I'm going to talk to, or maybe get professional advice or anybody. I'm not going to hold this stuff in like I did in those other relationships.
Definitely. So after the first one, as I said, it was back to back. So I didn't have the chance to really heal and process even the first, you know, one before the second one. So I actually had to go to, you know, counseling. I had to go to therapy for myself. Plus I had to go to like group domestic violence classes and I didn't want to do that. That was actually the courts making me do that. But it was one of the most helpful things that I could have done, because seeing other women and talking to other women about their situations was very helpful. And then actually having a, you know, licensed therapist guide you and tell you these red flags too and go over them, because we can think about them in our head and we can figure it out. But when you have someone that's licensed and they're telling you, and they actually have the literature and, you know, they're teaching you what to look out for, and then you know a little bit more, and then you get to know yourself a little bit more as well. Because a lot of people will not admit when they're in an abusive relationship, like everyone thinks it's one-sided, but that one side can turn into the other side. Like once you've been abused so much, you might, as a defense mechanism, start to abuse back first or whatever. Like, oh, I don't want him to start the fight or something, and then you start doing something. Or, you know, he's hit you and now you just hit him. None of that is good. None of that is okay. Or, you know, the men hit the women, the women might hit the kids, take it out on the kids. Anyway, and then women are abusers too. They abuse men. I've seen that.
Yes.
But that's something we don't talk about. So going to these classes helped a lot. And so, yeah, I have red flags that I just don't know. It's like I have to say no to. And it's kind of more like, yeah, I've been there before.
Mm-hmm. One thing I wanted to touch on.
No, I'm not going there. Unstable.
Yeah. One thing you mentioned before when we chatted, and I think it's important that people know, because a lot of people don't understand why we stay beyond the first time. And it's that circle, you know, of how when you go through the fighting and the arguing, and then they go through that peaceful mode where they're very forgiving, and then only when I call the painkillers come, and that's buying the gifts, and the intimacy is normally through the roof.
Yeah. It's back to the honeymoon stage. It's like, yeah, it's a cycle. It is a cycle, and a lot of people, they get addicted to that cycle where it's like they go through the blow up just so they could get that honeymoon feeling, that fresh feeling again, buy the gifts, and they're like trying to reinvent themselves or something to reprove that they're not this monster that they've been being. Like it's, and we fall for the okie dokie every time.
Yes.
And we go back and we do it again, and we want to repaint this picture. I'm like, he's a good man. He's just going through stress, or he's just this, or he was abused as a child, whatever excuse you want to give them. But in all actuality, this is just them, and they need to go get help. It's not that they can't change, but a lot of people aren't actively trying to change either. Like, it's different if they're saying they're going to change and they have like active goals and plans to reach these goals of how to change. Like, they're going to go to counseling. or something, but that's never hardly the case.
Right.
But it's then when you talk about why we stay, I had to think about it a lot, but one of the reasons I stayed was I didn't want to fail. I didn't want to be seen as a failure or having a failed relationship by my family and friends. So we would literally be at each other's throats and hate each other and then have to get dressed up and look cute and picture perfect to go to Thanksgiving dinner or Sunday for to watch football or to somebody's birthday party and be cute and take pictures all happy hunky dory. And you know, it's just, it's actually sad. So
yeah, I went through that in my first marriage. I trust me, I know the whole getting ready, the big family functions. And he came from a very, very successful, prominent Black family. Uh-huh. So they had huge gatherings and everything. And you have to go and you have to put on the face and you have to pretend like he wasn't just choking the hell out of you last night.
Yeah, act like everything is good. And people are like, oh, I wish I had that. No.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. I told you, I your story completely. Both stories, I lived through it with different people, but most of it was from my first marriage. Mm-hmm. Now, do you, I know you do the podcast and I know you have your career in ultrasound, but now do you do any advocacy for domestic violence? Do you do any speaking to young women or young men or, you know, anything relationship-wise, do you help the young people?
Not on this front. I'm just now starting to. I'm just now getting out there telling my story. I'm currently writing a book. I really want to get my story out there in more detail and see who I can help with that story. Yeah. I am actively, right now, helping kids. We recently started a nonprofit organization called Rock Era. And we are out here because I'm in Los Angeles, so we are actively in the Compton and Watts area helping the youth. Like, we just did a drive yesterday, bringing clothes and toys and, you know, socks and all the warm stuff that they needed for the winter. But I do want to get more into actually speaking when
your book comes out.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I told you I'm working on mine, so I know exactly how you, what you're saying, because I'm trying to get mine out by next year this time, so yeah, that I can go into the speaking, because I think it's needed, and just like you, I had to put it out there. Right. And, you know, because some people knew that was personal to me, but then a lot of people didn't know that I went through that whole thing. They knew I went through a divorce, but they didn't know why I went through my divorce. So I'm, you know, I've been speaking now for about a year now about publicly about going through that marriage itself, mm-hmm. and what it meant. And, but it actually, it took me losing people that was very close to me to be like, now is the time, because I lost two nieces, a nephew, and I lost a close girlfriend. Oh. And so, it's like, you can't sit on it no more. You have to talk about it, because it's so close to your own home with your own family members and your own friends.
Yeah.
It's like, this year, after I lost my girlfriend in February, not this year, it was last year, 2019, February 2019, we were childhood friends. And after losing her, I was like, oh, Lord, I have to get out there. I'm like, because I owe this to her, you know? So,
yes. If we can save one life, but telling our story is worth it regardless. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, exactly. And so I was like, this is my calling back to her, my nieces, that I actually start telling my story, sharing it, and letting young women know that it's not okay. Yes. That you're not crazy. And then when we were going through that honeymoon stage, you know, it was nobody there to tell us, like, that's a honeymoon stage. You know, we really thinking he gonna change. We're like, oh, but he came home with flowers and he came home with gifts and he's been super affectionate, and you know, so it was nobody there for us to tell. We're thinking like, okay, he is trying, I'm gonna give him one more try, you know. So we fall for the okie doke because no one talked about it to tell us that
What we were going through was nothing new. It's been happening for years and years, but you know, so it's like, that's what I want young women to know. You are not alone. Your situation
is- You are not alone, and you are worthy. That's where a lot of it is rooted from, us feeling worthless or feeling like we can't do better. Like, he's the best we can do. He's cute. He's whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, and people don't want to be alone. They're too afraid to be alone. But it's like, you are the person you have to live with for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. You got to get comfortable with that person in the mirror before you can even really be in a real healthy relationship. And so, yeah, take your time jumping into relationships. So when you see those red flags, don't ignore them, especially if they're violent. If you talk to a man and he talks bad about his ex, his baby's mother, his ex-wife, that you got to consider that. That's how he's going to talk about you. So.
Exactly. It's so crazy you mentioned that. I have another guest I recorded with Thursday of last week. She's going to air next week. I'm going to air her show. And she's developing a dating app. Launch in January, where you have to take a quiz and know your love language and your sex language, and then the app will compact you with whoever else is online that has the same compatibility. But that was something that her and I talked about, that she was saying that even when she was actively dating, that was something that she recognized her and her girlfriends were doing, was that when you meet people, take note to the fact of, just like you said, how do they talk about the people of their past? And so she was saying that she and her friends both, like, she didn't know at that time back in the day, like, when you meet them and then they start talking bad about their exes, you be thinking like, oh, okay, well, I'm nothing like her. Oh, I'm going to be the best thing you ever had. And what? Child, I ain't gonna do that. She didn't cook. I cook and that, you know.
Yeah.
But now that she's older, she went through therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And she's developing her own app for dating. Now that she knows what healthy dating is, that's a red flag. But like she said, no one talks about, that's a red flag when you, even for women, it's the same thing for men. When you meet a woman and every man she's dated was horrible, or whoever she dated, woman or man, whoever they dated was horrible, and everybody was evil, nobody was positive, that lets you know that, okay, something's not quite right. They've never had no good relationship, no good friendships. Everybody hate them, they family. You know, just life is just a mess. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So you have to know, like, okay, something's not quite right. They've never came across a good friend. They've never had a good relationship ever. You know what I'm saying? Ever. Yeah. So, yeah. But like,
you got a question though. That's another red flag.
Right, but like she said, no one talks about that. So that's why she created a dating app where people can give more information than instead of what they have out now, where they, my friends say, it's all about the looks. Swipe left, swipe right. You're just looking at someone aesthetic-wise and saying, okay, you look nice, I'm going to send you a message. It's like, no, you might need to dig a little deeper. Talk about some things you don't want to talk about, like your love language. Do you, you know, what do you like? Are you a person that likes a gift? So are you a person that likes service? What are you into sexually? Are you into you know, S&M? If you're into S&M, I need to know this up front because I'm not into it. And so we don't need to wait 6 months and then find out this is what you like, and then you're looking at me like, well, why don't you like it? Well, you never asked me. We never talked about it. You just assume that I what you like. So I agree, when you said that, it brought me back to her conversation, because that's what my whole podcast is about, unapologetically living, being yourself, whatever that may be. And it could be talking about what you went through, how you healed. So whatever it could be, whatever it could be, relationships, it could be career, entrepreneurship, it could be children, getting away from that conventional way of living where I have to just be quiet and stay in the relationship no matter if it's killing me on the inside. You know what I'm saying? I feel like I have to go along with whatever is, you know, going on in life, because I don't want, like you said, that shame, that guilt. It's another failed relationship. I don't want to, okay, now this is her second boo that didn't work out now. You know what I'm saying? You don't want people to chat about, so you just secretly stay, not knowing the people that you're trying to impress, is that they're in the toxic. Most of the time, they be in something toxic. You know, but you don't know it. So you're just thinking, well, she been with him for 10 years, so I can't just keep changing up like this, because, you know, people gonna start talking about me because I keep changing up. But as many as it takes for you to get it right, to make sure you're actually happy, and like I say, living your unapologetic life. You're not apologizing to people for saying, hey, no, it didn't work out for me. So now people, they laugh. I'm like, this is my second marriage, and I'm 40 now, but you know, when we met, I was under 40. This is my second marriage. And at the time I was 27 when I met my current husband. And so people was like, this is your second marriage and you only 20. Yes, it was almost my third, but I didn't marry him. You're not gonna talk about
it. I like to tell people, I'm like, I'm not afraid to be alone, and I don't waste time on mistakes. Like, no.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna spend more time on a mistake than I have to, like, dating. You know, coming out of that relationship and trying to date, it wasn't like I just found another Prince Charming, and I definitely wasn't going to jump into a third of a relationship, a third abusive relationship. So I dated a few people, and it was, you know, a nice few. But it's because as soon as I see the red flags, I got to go. I got to not go. And it's not acceptable. I have my list of things that I look for and things that I just will not accept, and I can't ignore them. Like, I give it I have like a 3-strike rule.
Okay.
This is the 3 strikes, like 3 of my red flags. I'm like, I just have to go. No matter how much I like this person, no matter how handsome, no matter how cute, no matter how much of a banging body or whatever, how good the sex is, got to go.
I love it, because you are being yourself. You're being authentic, and even though you're a few years younger than me, I love that you have arrived at this point now in your 30s. I love that you're here. That you're like, I'm not dealing with it. I'm not, because you don't know how many women don't arrive at this mindset until they're maybe in their 50s or their 60s.
Yeah,
I love that you're in your 30s and you're just like, no, I gotta put me first.
Heck yeah, because it trickles down. How you're treated, that's how you feel, and how you feel, it trickles down to your kids. And I had to realize they are my top priority. It's sad that I have to say I had to realize it, but wow. It's the truth. It's like, I had to, when I am not sure about something, I have to think about, how does this affect my kids? Mm-hmm. And then it puts it in perspective for me. That's what works for me. Mm-hmm. It might not work for everybody. May have another system. So it's like, this guy taking me out, getting me sloppy drunk, and me coming home sloppy drunk, how's that affect my kids? That's not good. Can't do this.
That's the whole sermon right there. That's the whole message. Once you become a mother, the game changes completely. You can do whatever the hell you want to do when you ain't got no kids. But when you got kids, honey, you got to think about what you do, because they're watching, even when they're young. And like you say, who you bring in their life, who they see you around, what they see you go through and you take, even down to how that person talks to you. Your kid watches how that person communicates with you. So,
yeah. They're learning how to love from watching you and what you do. They're learning how to live, love, and everything from watching you. So you want them to see somebody that's loving you, right? Like the way that you want your kids to be loved. So when you think of how you want your daughter or your son to be loved by their spouse, don't accept anything less than that from yours.
Exactly. That's really a good one. That is really good. I love it. Wrapping up, is there anything that you want to just say as last minute advice? It could be about anything. It could be about relationships. It could be about, you know, whatever, career, entrepreneurship, just life in general. Anything you want to say to the guests?
I'll go a little bit off the subject because I guess this the situation with me getting out of my relationship projected my life into a whole totally different way. Okay. And I had to learn that it's never too late, because while I was in a relationship, I wasn't able to really go back to school and do stuff. So I was able to, while, you know, after getting out of that relationship, I was able to go back and complete my bachelor's to do vascular ultrasound and musculoskeletal. I'm now learning musculoskeletal ultrasound because of a leg injury I have. But anyway, that's another story. But it's never too late to, you know, follow your dreams, to change your career path, to change your life, to change the people in your life. If you're not happy, find what makes you happy, what sets your soul on fire, what you're passionate about, and go after it with everything you got. And that's all.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And I agree. Thank you for taking time to chat with me. This will not be the last time you hear from me. I'm going to stay connected with you because I love your spirit. And I want to follow you as well on your journey as you, you know, blossom and write your book and launch so many amazing things. So we'll still keep in contact. Thank you for taking
time. I need your social media, your Instagram. If you are you on Instagram?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Afterwards, I'll connect with you and get you all my information. And then too, I'm gonna have you drop your link for your podcast so that they can listen in as well. Because I think that your podcast is kind of dope. I love the title, The Unrelenting Human. Okay. And I think that's very, very dope as well for them to get into, because it ties into who you are and then your current profession and all that. So that's something dope for them to follow as well. Yes. Thank you all for listening, for tuning in to another episode. As I always say, be your best self unapologetically. Make your own memories in life. Create your own opportunities. Do what feels good to you. No, not to anyone else. Until next time, I'm out, y'all.